Judge Conklin.
I'm present.
Ms. Fleming.
Present.
Judge Buckley.
Here.
Judge Cope.
He indicated he would not be able to appear based upon an urgent court matter.
Thank you. Judge Fannin. Judge Gabe.
Here.
Thank you. Judge Heinrichs.
Here.
Judge Kelly.
Here.
Judge Marginis. Judge Ryan.
Present.
Judge Thompson.
Here.
Ms. Bartleson. Ms. Carter.
I'm here, and so is Judge Marginis. He just did not unmute his phone, by the way.
Thank you. I have that noted.
Thank you, Sherry. I appreciate that.
Ms. Eberhardt.
Let the record reflect, I was going to let Judge Marginis know to announce his presence, but
yeah,
Sherry,
right,
as always, on the spot. Thank you.
Ms. Eberhardt.
Here.
Ms. Kosinski.
Here.
Mr. Landry.
Here.
Mr. Planet.
Here.
Mr. Rule.
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi.
Here.
Mr. Taylor.
Here.
Ms. Turner. Mr. Yamasaki.
Here.
And advisory members, Mr. Wardlaw. And Ms. Mueller.
Here.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you all. I think we have everybody on board.
Judge Conklin, can I jump in? This is Judge Heinrichs. Kim Bartleson's in my room with me. She couldn't get on in her computer.
Great. Well, then we'll show she's in. And Kim Turner had mentioned as well she had a court emergency, so she probably wouldn't be able to attend, at least until later. So thank you all very much for your attendance this morning. I just want to get the meeting started with a few comments, and then I'm going to turn it over and continue to participate with those who are the true individuals responsible for these proposals. So I'm just going to remind everybody that we have come together today in a continuation of our efforts to allocate the $50 million COVID workload backlog funding that was provided by the court, provided by the governor's generous budget and the work of Martin and the chief and others to assist us with our COVID backlog. Before I do that, I want to let the members of TICBAC know what's going on, kind of been going on in the interim since we last met, and that is a tremendous amount of work by our COVID workload backlog members who, while I usually don't do this, I want to take a moment and acknowledge and appreciate Rebecca Fleming, who is the chair of that group, mm-hmm. Judge Fannin, Judge Kelly, Sherry Carter, Chad Finke, Sean Landry, Brian Taylor, Kim Turner, and David Yamasaki. And I can attest to the work they've been doing, because while I've tried to keep myself out of their meetings, I haven't been particularly successful. I've been at every meeting they've been at and let them do the work. And they've been meeting as a group and as well through almost every day, including over the weekends, to try to get this appropriate problem resolved. So I was tempted to use the analogy of Doris Kearns Goodwin, Team of Rivals book, but these folks are not rivals. They're not rivals at all. But it is a group of individuals who are experienced, knowledgeable, and wise about this issue. And so I would ask, as we work through this today, that the folks keep in mind this is we often use the phrase, don't let the perfect stand in way of the good. This proposal needs vetting, and that's what we're going to do today. We're going to vet it. But I preface this meeting with these remarks because I don't want the folks that have not been on the working group to think that this has just been a nonchalant recommendation brought about by a 15-minute long meeting. It's anything but. So I'm probably just expressing the fatigue we're all under, and you can probably see that in just the way I'm presenting this. I'm being a little more serious than usual. I don't mean to be, except to recognize that these folks have taken on even more of a burden. So let me, now that I've said that, Let me frame our discussion today, because remember what we've done, what we're doing today is we're now working within the four-part Judicial Council motion that came to us after their last meeting. And you all have that. But the Judicial Council motion was as follows. Of the 50, and I'm just going to read it because it's what we're working within. Of the $50 million appropriated to the judicial branch for COVID-19-related backlogs, the council immediately approved the $25 million using the pro rata method approved. And we're going to start our discussion there in just a minute. That was motion one. Two was TICBAC will develop a more precise definition and practices for documenting and reporting COVID-19-related backlogs and reporting its recommendation to the council prior to the distribution of the second $25 million, which is where we'll concentrate today. Third, TICBAC will gather from trial courts data regarding how trial courts spent the first $25 million, and significantly within that motion, report that data back to the council prior to the allocation of the second $25 million. And third, have TICBAC develop in consultation with JBBC recommendations for allocating the remaining $25 million on a data and needs basis. TICBAC will report that recommendation to the council. So we have some loops to go through here, folks, before we finish our work. And I'm just reminded that was the ding you heard, and I moved ahead of myself. Not that it's not important, but could I invite a motion to approve the minutes of our last meeting?
Move to approve, Judge Thompson.
Yeah, Judge Thompson in a second.
8 seconds.
Moved and approved at the minutes of the last meeting. Any objection to that motion? Deem it unanimously approved. So thanks for reminding me of that. So the goal before us today is to address those two aspects of the $50 million, the $25 million allocation that's already gone out to the courts, and the $50 million, the second $25 million that we'll discuss today a methodology for. So by way of suggestion, I would think it would be most efficient. You have all the recommendations set forth at page 12 of your materials. If the majority of folks feel we should go a different direction, but I propose that we immediately consider by way of a motion recommendation C, the first sentence of recommendation C. That is, that the workload subcommittee recommends that the eligible expenditures for the first $25 million. So that's gone out, but we have a responsibility to provide to the courts pursuant to the council motion the definition of how that money can and should be spent. So the eligible expenditures for the first $25 million include, but are not limited to, equipment, personal protective equipment, remote technologies, and personnel costs directly related to COVID-19.
Move to approve.
And who was that?
Judge Ryan.
Judge Ryan moved to approve.
Yamasaki seconds.
All right. So let's open that up to brief discussion if necessary. And I'm reminding folks the reason I'm proposing that we just resolve this right away is we all have that money. We have heard that many courts have said, but they want to make sure they are within the parameters of the TICBAC recommendation and the council action before they actually spend the money. So that's what we're helping them do today, is just provide them those parameters for their ability to spend that money. And Rebecca, I'm sorry, I don't mean to, in any way, I'm about to turn it over to you for the real important stuff, but if anybody has any further suggestions or thoughts on this before I call for a vote on that initial motion, I don't mean by trying to rush through this that we should not discuss it, if anybody has any concerns.
Judge Conklin, this is Chris Rule. Just one clarifying question.
Go ahead.
And that is the date on which the incurred expenses would begin. Would it be as of July 1st, or would it be when the COVID emergency started back in March?
Well, I'll let Brandy and or Rebecca and others answer that, but this is this fiscal year, so it'd be July 1st. It's this fiscal year funding.
That's correct, Judge Conklin.
Okay, thank you.
And what I would suggest is that as we move forward, if this is to pass, if there's any court that has any concerns about how to apply this funding to the expenses this fiscal year, we certainly have a number of people who can provide some reference on how to do that.
Okay, so it's been moved and go. I'm sorry.
Judge Conklin, this is Brandy. I just want to clarify that the motion is on the first part of recommendation C for the first $25 million and excludes the second $25
million. That's right, because that second sentence is related to the second $25 million. So I prefaced the invitation for the motion to just that first sentence.
Got it. Thank you.
I have a question.
And who's that?
Neil Taniguchi.
Go ahead, Neil.
Does this definition include other non-personnel costs like contracts or facilities costs?
I don't think it excludes that, as and I don't mean to speak over, but Rebecca or Brandy also mentioned if you have a question, call. And candidly, what we're trying to do here is come up with a very credible, transparent definition for the first $25 million, but recognize that that's to try to address steps courts took initially. And the question was, does it apply to the past fiscal year? It doesn't. But courts have been very adept and appropriate in reacting and pivoting immediately. So some courts pivoted well before the beginning of the fiscal year. I think we all did. This is a pivot that continues into this fiscal year. And Neil, it may include things that are not listed on this because it says specifically including but not limited to.
So Judge Conklin, if I can add, specifically we discussed in the subcommittee that the recommendation would be that all general ledger expense line items would be eligible and that the court would have to make the decision as to whether those expenses related to their backlog in some sort. And so in one court, there may be an expense in, say, a facilities area that relates to their backlog. And in another court, it might be in an operations supply type of an expense. And so it still should relate to backlog, but we did not exclude any general ledger expense line item.
Neil, thanks for that question. Any others? I've waited, I paused, I hear no questions or further discussion. It's been moved and seconded that the first motion to approve recommendation C, sentence one only, be approved. And I'm gonna pause after I ask this question because I wanna be very, very careful. Is there any objection to that specific motion by any member of TCPAC? Paused, I've waited, I hear no objection. I'm gonna deem that motion unanimously approved. So now let's move to the second $25 million. So I just reminded you structurally, now we're moving forward, but don't forget our work as an advisory committee to try to assist the council and Martin and others in continuing work beyond this fiscal year. Because I'm just speaking for myself, but I'm probably parroting what all of you are thinking. These COVID is by no means over. And folks, I'm staying away from politics. I am not in any way trying to imply anything, but I'm just stating, if for instance, there were to be a vaccine today and it was distributed to all of us today, these costs are gonna impact us for years to come based upon what's already happened. So that's what we are looking forward to as well. And I don't say that affirmatively, I say that with some trepidation. As we work with this $25 million, it's not limited to this second $25 million. We have a lot of work ahead of us. So with that, Rebecca chaired the committee. She was assisted greatly by all the members and staff, including Leah and Brandy and Fran and Zlatko and others. So I don't know at this point, Rebecca, if you'd prefer to just summarize that main recommendation. I don't want to just turn and dump it on you, but I think you're probably the best one to do that. I'm sorry to interrupt. We have public comment as well. We received one public comment. It went to all members, but it is in many times in meetings, public comment is heard, appreciated, but because of current practice is not commented on. But this is a public comment that may assist us in our discussion and decision. So we're gonna deal with it. And Rebecca, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's fine. So first of all, I think I'm frozen on the screen, but I really am here. So anyway, just to, first of all, I want to thank the subcommittee. This is a very difficult conversation, and it is not over by any means. We're dealing with something that is undefined, and that is how to identify COVID backlog. And there's been robust conversation. There has been a lot of dialogue back and forth, and there has been a very abbreviated time period that we have had to work through this. And so to that point, we do have a recommendation today for you. We have some background, and what I will do is I will be asking Leah to walk through this. But prior to that, what I do want to say is that we did receive public comment. There is, you know, we did have some operating principles that we operated from, and I do think that the conversation prior to getting to any recommendations, I do think that there should be discussion today about the fact that there are concerns about whether or not enough discussion has gone into this, whether or not enough of our building blocks are included in the presentation, and whether or not we should include, you know, go back and perhaps include more of our discussion in that. Certainly our next steps will have to be going to the JBBC group, and we are not, we do not present these recommendations until we have worked with them in conjunction and have a joint proposal. And so with that, I think if Leah is on the line, I'm going to ask her to walk through our process and the principles that we established, and then we can open it up for discussion. I will say I want to thank everybody who is on this committee and the courts who are not on the committee that have reached out and shared ideas and thoughts about our approach. It has been helpful. It's given us different points of perspective, and it may indeed help us to frame this proposal to be as clear, a little bit more clear than we are even today. So with that, Leah, if you're prepared, I'm going to turn it over to you to describe what our process was and the principles, and then where, and maybe we can stop short of the recommendations to have discussion and then go through the recommendations.
Okay, Rebecca, I'll be glad to do that. And I also would invite any of the members of the subcommittee to chime in and make sure that that I'm stating the information correctly. As Rebecca mentioned, the committee worked in a very short amount of time, and so we just want to make sure that this summary captures the discussion. So there were three meetings. The subcommittee met three different times, and from those meetings, there was a very robust discussion each time. And I would say that coming out of those meetings, we landed on there was a set of principles for under which the subcommittee decided to proceed on its decision. So number one, most clearly, the allocation decision had to be made on the basis of backlog. The committee wanted to make sure that all courts would be eligible for receiving funding if they could show that they had a backlog. The committee wanted a methodology that was transparent, that was simple to implement, and simple to report back on. The methodology had to be data-based, and the data reporting burden had to be as minimized as possible. The committee was very cognizant of the fact that the allocation decision had to be made quickly in order to get the funding to courts quickly. They recognized that many had already expended funds far in excess of the allocation in order to resume operations. The committee also spent a fair amount of time discussing that, as Judge Conklin alluded to, that this pandemic and the effects on court backlog would be with us for a long period of time. And so in addition to any point in time measurement, the allocation methodology needed to account for future backlog. So workload that hasn't hit the court system yet, but that will once courts expand their operations and capacity. And underlying some of the decisions about the data being used for this methodology, the group had a presumption that if the pandemic hadn't hit, that workload and operations might be comparable to operations or workload in the prior year. And so the selection of the data point, the disposition data, as compared to a year prior was made on that basis. So Rebecca or members of the subcommittee, are there any other thoughts or comments about some of the principles or the summary of the discussion that I've given?
If there's no questions, let's go ahead and move on to the recommendations, Leah.
Okay, I'm not seeing any hands, so I'll go ahead and discuss. So, you know, one thing I do want to say is that while the report itself may not reflect all of the options considered, I think it's worth pointing out that over the course of the three meetings, that there were several courses of action that were considered. The subcommittee asked staff to provide information on filings patterns and disposition patterns, both current and over the past 3 years. And so there was a consideration using filings data to create, in one instance, a pandemic weighted caseload model that would have a COVID factor. That option was rejected because it seemed complicated and might require a time study to calculate the delay factor. The committee contemplated using some sort of relationship between filings and dispositions, for example, a ratio or a gap, to express the backlog, but decided that they could achieve a similar or same result by just focusing on the disposition data. The committee also spent time contemplating a two-part model that would include both a point-in-time snapshot of backlog plus a forward-facing measure of backlog that they would, you know, look at delay factors that would account for expected slowing of core processes. And ultimately, they decided not to go forward with that option because it was difficult to implement in a shortened time frame. And the committee did not feel that they had sufficient data about the delay factor that they would need to gather that data from multiple courts to come up with a data-driven assessment of a delay factor. And so finally, the committee landed on using disposition data as a proxy for measuring a backlog. And with that, I'm going to move into the recommendations, but I'll pause again for just a moment, make sure what the subcommittee is in agreement that those were the options that we had considered, that I summarized them correctly.
And I'm just going to note that those options are before this committee in the sense that Leah has just summarized them, and they will be in the report as it moves forward to show options that were considered, the advantages and disadvantages of each of those options as they were thoughtfully considered by the working group. So if anybody else wants to add anything to those, otherwise, Leah, excellent job on that.
Okay, then I'll go ahead and proceed. So I believe that I'll start by just saying that number one, that the subcommittee spent they wanted to make sure that they had an exact definition of backlog, that they wanted to make sure that they were clear on the information that they would eventually be conveying to courts for the methodology being used. And so in the recommendations, which are, I believe, on page 12 of the report, I don't know the packet reference at the moment, but the definition of the COVID-19 backlog is defined as workload that was not disposed during the pandemic period. The committee chose the pandemic period as being from March 2020 through September 2020. And specifically, the methodology used to measure that backlog would be comparing the pandemic period backlog to the year prior. So comparing that March 2020 through September 2020 period to 1 year prior, that would be March 2019 through September 2019. And that the funding, the remaining $25 million would be allocated proportionally based on each court's share of that backlog. So again, it's taking the difference between those two periods of time and then allocating proportionally based on each court's share. Rebecca or committee members, any additional thoughts or comments about those two elements.
So again, here I am not a working group member saying I wouldn't, but I will. Just keep in mind, folks, that that's the six-month period we talk about is for this instant decision and for this $50 million. Obviously, as we move forward into upcoming years, we're gonna expand data and time periods and that type of thing. So I just want to make clear that's for this initial $50 million allocation.
Yeah, and I'll just actually add to that. There was quite a conversation about what we don't know yet. And so we were really focused on what can we utilize as information that we do know. And we also acknowledge the fact that in 6 months, we may have a completely different understanding of what the COVID pandemic has done to us and what other factors might be necessary. And so this is really a first pass at what we know so far to be our impact. And so our recommendations or our proposals to the council will reflect that there needs to be ongoing conversations about the ongoing impact to the courts. It's definitely just not even the first layer. It's barely scratching the surface. And so I would say that there will be a continued effort by this committee, the subcommittee, to identify more of the real-time impacts to the courts.
Yeah, thank you, Rebecca. I should add that's exactly one of the items that I noticed. Now I don't think we made this as a formal recommendation, but certainly the subcommittee did decide that while the focus was on expediency and simplicity with this second allocation, that the subcommittee did not want to just disband and cease working on this issue, that this issue of ongoing delay was something that needed to be measured and quantified, that there was a thought that while we didn't feel that in the shortened time frame we could do that calculation of the delay factor, that we heard from committee members that there was great concern that the methodology may not account for this backlog in the future. And so I believe that the last meeting of the subcommittee acknowledged that there would be continued work in this area and that they wanted to continue to refine the methodology to include that ongoing factor.
And I see that Judge Heinrichs raised her hand, and then David Yamasaki, and then Nancy.
Thank you.
So I guess my question really is why we end up with just the backlog being defined as September 2020, since these funds are probably the only funds we're going to receive for this fiscal year related to COVID backlog. And I don't know what the answer is. I guess wanted to put that into the discussion. And the hard part about this for someone that wasn't on the committee, which I know you guys did a ton of work, is kind of getting a head around all the other types of options. So while I have a question or concern about it, I don't really have any other suggestions that might be helpful, but I just wanted to ask that question.
So Judge Heinrichs, I think the discussion centered around the desire to get the data recorded through the GPSIS system and records that we have to cut it off at a certain point in time where there won't be sufficient time for the court to submit the DISPO data, whether collected in GPSIS or otherwise. And, one thing too is that that period of time has closed, and so we would presume that at this point there should be complete data through September 30th, and that will give courts the next couple of months to compile their data for reporting.
So, Judge Heinrichs, did that answer your question?
Yeah, it answered it is what I thought it would be as far as certainty about those things. It's just,
have to reverse engineer all these decisions because we're almost halfway through the fiscal year. I mean, in December we will be. So you're right. We hesitated. They hesitated to limit the time period. But on the other end, as Leah just made clear, we have to give the courts time to report it. And so we had a definite time period that they could do that to reverse engineer it so we could get this to JBBC to get it to the council at a later date.
Yeah, I guess my concern really is that it, I mean, and it is always when it's the case with when the legislature gives us money for a specific purpose, and then we try to put it with in our existing system, that I think sometimes it's just challenging, and whether or not we actually make the mark or not, I think is a challenge as well. I don't have any other suggestions. It's just more, it's perplexing for how we do our work when it's all in this way. But anyway, that was my question. Thanks.
Thanks, David.
Yes, thank you very much, Judge Conklin. One of the things I just wanted to touch upon during this meeting was the great deal of thought trying to identify specific variables that best describe the situation that we're experiencing here at the courts. As I understand it, the impact was severe in some jurisdictions and less severe in others. So looking at, dispositions as a, what are we calling it, a proxy of looking at the impact of COVID and the backlogs and such, seem to be a reasonable place to land. When you can't get cases out, they end up churning, they end up coming back over and over again, and quite honestly, in many jurisdictions, they experience the same thing that we did here in Orange, where parties were not ready. Defendants could not be brought to court. Defendants were sick, so those cases churned. And we're going to see these cases again in the future. And focusing on the dispositions and the reduction that all of us sustained during this time seemed to be a next best thing that we could capture because of the difficulty in really understanding the workload that we're all facing. And looking at workload is precisely what we do when we're determining what the funding methodology should be for courts. How many filings did a court receive within a certain period of time? And it's very unique. Some courts are high, some courts are medium, and some courts are low. But the funding is apportioned in a manner that considers filings. And it seems reasonable, I think, to look at the same volume of work that a court not only is receiving, but also court is processing. And the focus on the dispositions seems to be information that we could all provide and best reflect, in my view, the impact of COVID and the fact that we're struggling right now because we don't have open departments. We can't conduct jury trials, and all those variables that I think are an indication that we're still struggling. And those cases are going to be here for a while until we adjudicate them. And so I know that we thought a little bit about filings as a particular measure. One of the challenges that we were looking at in terms of filings was many of the prosecuting agencies have really been stifled by local challenges. So that was not necessarily a strong tool to use to measure the backlog, but they're going to start up again. And I'm very hopeful that this group continues forward in looking at what we're going to see off in the future with respect to filings. They could escalate very quickly, or they can gradually go up. Not sure, but I think it's something that we should be looking at. And one of the things that helps me reconcile the focus on dispositions is this. Month to month, the dispositions that we experience are not as a result of filings that occurred that month. We're talking about filings that could have taken place months and months and months ago. So even though our filings have not necessarily gone up or they've perhaps gone down, we're still struggling to get through the cases that we've received many months ago. And that's one of the reasons why I think looking at the dispositions and the reduction that we've all sustained and applying a potential formula for distribution based on the impact at a local court seems to correlate, I guess,
with the impact that a local court has sustained with the pandemic. So I know that there have been, I guess, many opportunities to look at other variables. The key point too is, what information do we have? How can we synthesize information in such a way that we can recognize the challenges that a court has sustained locally and try to get the money out as quickly as possible, but also using a particular formula? So it's not perfect, but it is extremely opportune for us to take a look at dispositions. And over time, I think we'll have a chance to see what's happened over the next few months and figure out if we can refine this approach going forward. Thanks, Judge. Right,
David. Thanks, David. We have Nancy, Chris, and then Sherry raised her hand. Nancy.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. So first, I just want to say thank you to the working group. This is a difficult charge, and each county was greatly impacted by COVID differently, right? All were impacted, but all were impacted differently. And some of them came into the COVID crisis affected by their level of service tied to funding in the first place, and then also their degree of technology as they entered into it. So every county has had a different experience. My question, and what I'm trying to get around on dispositions, and hopefully you can help me with that, is that there was a comment made about workload being similar to last year. It's a little bit different, though, in that dispositions before trial may have continued, even though a courthouse was closed. So things that drop off naturally, like settlements, dismissals, you know, those type of things may factor into the disposition. So my question is, what is the definition of disposition that we're using here? And does it include dispositions before trial, during trial, after trial? What are we looking at as far as disposition as a whole?
So this is Rebecca. Can I answer that? Or and Leah can jump in if I misstate this. But Nancy, our definition of dispositions was to use the consistent definition from GPSIS. And so as dispositions are defined by GPSIS, that is the definition that we were using for this effort, or this is the reference we were making for dispos. Did I say that correctly, Leah?
I would just add that it's disposition at the, for those who are really familiar with GPSIS, it's at the highest level of GPSIS reporting. So it just means the case has disposed in some manner, whether before trial as a or other dispositive event, or so it does include all the matters that resolved even in the pretrial phase. They have just somehow been closed off from the further activity.
Does that answer your question, Nancy?
It does. Thank you.
Great. So now we've got Chris, then Sherry, and Brian raised his hand. Chris?
Yes, thank you, Judge Conklin. And like Nancy, I want to really thank the subcommittee for all their work the last several weeks. This is clearly no small exercise to do in this kind of time frame. So really appreciate the efforts. I definitely do at some point want to get to a discussion of the alternative methodology that was proposed in the public comment. I trust we will get to that. My immediate question is concerning case weighting and exploring that a little further. Leah, you mentioned a little bit that there was some consideration of trying to create a pandemic COVID-related case weight. And my question goes more towards just a simple incorporation of case weighting into the allocation methodology. And you know, the big, you know, the one way this presents itself, obviously, is in traffic cases. You know, far and away, the lowest, smallest of our case weights, also far and away, the largest part of our volume, our case volume. And so, you know, for example, looking at the hypothetical examples in the proposed recommendation, for example, if say 80% of the disposition reduction for Court C, for example, was due to traffic cases, whereas only maybe 40% of the disposition reduction in Court A was due to traffic cases, I'm assuming trying to process all that traffic case log, all the non-traffic case log backlog, will take significantly more time and effort than the traffic-related case log. So just want to sort of hear the committee's, the subcommittee's thoughts or Leah's thoughts on that, since we do actually report disposition data by case type. And so the data is available by case type.
Rebecca or Leah, who either, well, we clearly talked about it. Either one of you want to take that?
I'll let Leo speak to that one.
Okay. So just in terms of weighting itself or using case weights, I think that there was a fair amount of discussion in the subcommittee about using a modified workload model to address the fact that that cases are taking longer to process because of mainly because of physical distancing requirements. So we heard that courts have have calendars with fewer individuals, that there is more lag time between calendared events to clear the courthouse, and that creates scenarios where the workload models may not reflect the time needed. We did not discuss applying weights to the disposition data, that our weighted caseload model is based on filings, and the conversation was more geared toward dispositions. For right now, I would say that the committee was contemplating using total dispositions, so for all case types, civil, criminal, including all the traffic case types, but it certainly would be something to consider whether or not there's a consideration for taking the traffic matters out because of the impact that they might have on the allocation.
Before I go to Sherry, Rebecca, anything you wanted to add to that?
No, thank you, Judge.
Sherry?
Thank you. So I wanted to, for the benefit of the committee members that were not part of the working group, I wanted to try to simplify this because I think all of these issues were raised by the working group in terms of how best to allocate this money. And so in a nutshell, this proposal only addresses funding directed to backlog for those cases that got stuck during the pandemic. That's the best way to look at it. That the funding here, this $25 million, is to help with the cases that got stuck during court closures and everything else. I don't agree with David that the new filings are not impacting us. In fact, I think they are significantly impacting many courts because of priorities on how cases have to be disposed of and matters have to be disposed of. So I think in many counties, filings have gone up. They've gone up radically in certain areas, and based on the priority of the filings, they may have to be addressed before stuck cases, civil stuck cases, for example. But I also agree with David that this is a good way to approach the funding because the first $25 million that was allocated on our typical method gave all the courts funding to address COVID-related issues, from plexiglass to staff costs to whatever it is that we needed to spend that money on to address COVID-related issues broadly. The second $25 million is more directly related to backlog. And while I think this is a very simple approach, the reason that I think it's a wise one is because it is simple to calculate for people to understand. The legislature, the judicial council, the rest of our colleagues will clearly understand that we have used those cases that got stuck during the pandemic as an easy definition for backlog, because we don't want to create a process that is so complex. It's difficult for people to understand and accept, and it's difficult to explain, because we do have a next step. And that would be one of the things that I'm very supportive of, is to measure what I call a delay factor for new filings. We know there are delay factors. I put a lot of effort in our court to try to identify what they were the courtroom side. It takes 3 to 4 times longer to impanel a jury, for example, because of social distancing. Now, I think that Rebecca and Judge Conklin already inferred that we're going to work on those things. I would encourage us to work with the WAC committee for temporarily applying a delay factor to all of the RAS categories for minutes to be applied to next year's filings for our new allocation, or if the legislature gives us additional funding for additional backlog because of the delay factor of new filings, we could apply something like that to new filings. But for this approach on cases that are stuck, I think this is a simple way to define it. And I think that because we've already found a way to provide relief more broadly with the first 50%, I am supportive of it.
Thank you, Sherry. Brian Taylor, did you have a, you had your hand up at some point, or did
yes.
you?
Yes, I did. So my comments are based on, I do have a concern about part of the recommendation and formula, and that's based upon we spent a lot of time really developing the formula, and we didn't have adequate time, I feel, to discuss the application of the full formula. And so when I got the recommendation, and I ran the dispositions for Solano, and we're at 75% this year as opposed to last year. And so when you read the formula, it's very possible that I or any court could get to March and they still have a similar ratio. For example, I could still be at 75% in March. And if you read the proposal directly, that would look like we've done no work on backlog, where we know we all have backlog because the clerk's office tells me it takes longer to process paperwork. We have additional staff for jury trials. We have additional staff setting up remote hearings. And so I think where a concern comes in for me is not the disposition part or not how we begin, but when we get to March, when we talk about an evaluation or redistribution, and we still specifically tie it to dispositions, I think an application that can be problematic, and I think it fails to take into consideration all of the other backlog that we're actually experiencing on a day-to-day basis. And so if we had more time to work on this as far as an application perspective, I would have liked to have seen a little bit, maybe some more charts as to see how this actually works out with courts so that we could make sure that it applies fairly. And so I would like for us to take a look at the recommendation, the second sentence in item C, because I think an application that actually could work to the detriment of many, well, I don't think it could accurately support what we're trying to do. And for example, with what Sherry says about these cases are stuck, we could still get to March because of the way court works, and these cases are still stuck. And so it doesn't give an accurate depiction of how courts are working on backload. So I do have that concern on section C, and I don't feel we had adequate time to really talk about that on the subcommittee level. So the beginning part I'm totally fine with. And I'm also receptive to having a discussion about modifying the proposal, or at least how it would work with the public comment that we received on development of four tiers. I would like to hear about how that might work.
So right, Brian, thanks. So before I get to Judge Marginis, he had his hand up. Before I get to you, either Rebecca or Leo want to respond to Brian's, or anybody else on the working group respond to Brian's thoughts?
Hi, this is Rebecca. So I think in terms of your first comments on the March reporting or the redistribution, I know you and I have had a conversation about that. And so did you have suggestions on how the recommendation might be rephrased or re-presented to meet your concerns? Or are you suggesting hold back on any areas completely, or what are your thoughts on that part of it?
Well, one, I think if we take a look at the disposition data from the outset, that that demonstrates backlog. And so we already know that there's a backlog for courts to work on. What we may not be able to identify is when courts will get to that backlog because of the way that cases flow. And it could also be that you're working on backlog, which is not tied specifically to dispositions, but it's still backlog. And when we get to March, and if you look at it, and courts are still in that same relative percentage, it now appears that courts have not been working on backlog, which we all know not to be true. So what I would do is I would stick with the dispositions from the outset, but I would not do a redistribution. And I also believe that we as a committee, as we've been discussing, by a delay factor or continuing to analyze this, that there are other factors as part of backlog that are not recognized specifically just by dispositions. And I think we need to, even though we've tried to narrow this into this proposal, I think it's important to recognize, as we've stated, and that we're gonna continue to work on, but I still feel like this overall proposal should recognize that there are areas of backlog that we as all courts will be working on. And all courts have had backlog just based upon the emergency rules withholding unlawful detainers, the kicking of jury trials. And so that may not show up in March with a reevaluation. And that gives me a concern.
Rebecca or Leah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, my impression of the group's conversation was not that there was some kind of an expectation of a reduction of backlog by March. I think that we're going to be in this for several months. And I think the March and the reevaluation was simply in an effort, if there was funding left, to redistribute to those courts. However, that being said, one option that the group could consider, and frankly, that we did consider in the working group, was that part of our work in terms of if there is some kind of a re-evaluation could be part of our further work. And so to that extent, if there's, you know, recommendations in language that everybody feels comfortable with as far as making sure that it does not put a court at a disadvantage by inferring that there has to be some kind of a progression downward in backlogs. I mean, maybe someday we're going to get to that. I don't think that was the intent of the group thus far. So I would just add that in. In terms of your second conversation, your piece of the conversation that had to do with the public comment, we did receive the public comment. We did review the public comment, but there's not been an analysis of that. So I'm not sure that we are prepared to speak to how that would all work and what have you. And so I would just put out that if there is some kind of a directive from the group to evaluate that, then we would need to go back to the committee. I will say that in our coordination with JBBC, I think it is important that we identify all of the factors that we have evaluated and all of the approaches we've evaluated. The public comment does kind of touch on some of those things that we did evaluate and talk about. And so certainly anything that we want to express outward to the bigger group, we should make sure it is in the report going forward. And so I would just throw it back to Judge Conklin as to where you would like to go from that. And well, I think Judge Marginis had his hand up as well.
Right, so I'll get to your margins in just a minute, but to sort of answer that in a more general sense, remember that the motion from the Judicial Council requires that we consult with JBBC before we go back to the council. So when any recommendation we make today is going to go to JBBC for them to work with us as we continue to vet it, and presumably with the working group. The other dynamic, Brian, as I'm sure you recognize, is this is not ongoing funding. This is just this year. So by the time we get to March, we're three quarters of the way through the fiscal year. So at some point, we have to be able to address if there is any remaining funds, why, and where they're going to go. But you're right, Brian, we also perhaps want to consider some type of safety valve factor to say, Well, but no court's going to get more than, for instance, its second pro rata distribution unless and until it can be established that all the courts have been addressed concerning their COVID workload backlog. So we could build in a safety valve to take care of those courts that might need more time to get this data in than others. But now, Judge Marginis.
Thank you. And I want to begin by joining in the comments of others on TICBAC and thanking the ad hoc subcommittee for all of its hard work in coming up with the recommendations that we are discussing today. My point is entirely different. It's actually quite small, but I think it'll take on significance later on. It's part of the recommendation, and it'll be important when courts start compiling numbers for the two time periods of 2019 and 2020, and it's simply this. The definition in the recommendations is the workload that was not disposed of during March 2020 through September 2020, which Judge Conklin referred to as 6 months. Technically, it could be 7 months or 6 months or anything in between. And so my suggestion is that at some point we agree on the starting date, including the day of the month for the period and the ending date. And that's it.
Okay. Leah, you had a comment? And thanks. And we'll address that, Judge Marginis. You make a good point. Leah?
Yeah, thank you. So to Judge Marginis' point, we would, from a GIPS's perspective, define it, and we can revise the recommendation to read from March 1st, 2020 through September 30th, 2020. And I recognize that we had not fully been sheltered as of March 1, but the way that we receive data from the courts is on a monthly basis. And so that is the closest approximation that we can come to capturing that period of time. I did want to go back to Brian Taylor's comment and just raise for the committee's consideration that in some of our recommendation at item D, where we reference the March 2021, I believe it was the subcommittee's intent that that date was to be used to consider redistributing funding for those courts that may not have been able to expend their share of the $25 million. But I believe it was the subcommittee's intent to not do additional or further data collection related to the backlog, not the pending backlog, that's the future work, but that we were not contemplating doing a second pull of backlog data at that date. March 2021 was simply a date that we would take stock on the distribution side, and if any court was unable to expend, we would at that point consider reallocating. So I'm going to just put that out there for discussion, and we will revise the recommendation accordingly if we did not capture that correctly.
Chris, I see Chris roll his hand up before that. Before I get to you, Chris, and then Chad, I just want to get to Rebecca to see if, Rebecca, if you want to add any to Leah's comments. I think they're very appropriate in the sense of, and maybe I'm stating this a little too drastically, but we have to cut it off at some point because this is one-year funding, and we have to start working towards next year. So,
right.
Rebecca, anything you wanted to add to that?
So I think that there is space here in these recommendations if there is some language suggestions that would make the courts more comfortable in the application of those funds. I think there is room for that. I also think that there is room in the proposal to include more of our dialogue prior to it going to the council. That being said, I think we're going to far expend what we have available as a group. I don't think there's going to be excess funds. And I do think that we have enough options in front of us to continue to identify further expenses. And so I would look for the group, and I know we have a couple more comments, but I would hope from the group that we would get some kind of a motion or directive to either modify the recommendations that have been put before us or to go back and with specific direction on how to modify or what particular items to modify. Anyway, that would be my comment.
And Chad, I saw your hand. I think I saw your hand next.
Thank you, Judge. So I agree with the concern that Brian raised, and to Rebecca's point that she just made, I think maybe part of the concern is in item C of the recommendations, the second sentence that says eligible expenditures for the second 25 million are for expenses that address and reduce the COVID-19 backlog. And I wonder, sort of trying to think this through on the fly, if we struck and reduce and just said address. And the reason I say that is, you know, a court may get its share of the second 25 million and may absolutely spend that share completely addressing its backlog as we have defined, which is in terms of the dispos. But if, for example, that particular court had a massive, you know, staff outbreak of COVID, their ultimate dispo rate may actually get worse, even though they had legitimately spent all of the 25 million on addressing the pre-existing backlog. And so I think it from my perspective, at least, it's the notion that, okay, if your data in March don't show that your dispo rate, you know, got better or that your dispo backlog was reduced, you may have to give the money back. When in fact, in very, very good faith, you may have easily spent all that money addressing that. And so I hope that makes sense, but that may be one way to tweak the recommendation to try to address the concern that Brian raised.
So I'll let Leah and Rebecca weigh in on that, but I think we have to be cognizant of the outside appearance that we're going to have to be able to show some progress. I mean, we're going to have, and Chad, I get your point, and Brian, I get yours, and maybe it is as far as to say those courts kept their head above water, so to speak. I mean, those courts are going to have to be able to show if they didn't make progress. The reason they didn't make progress is because they were doing something to continue to survive. So I know I'm overgeneralizing, but I don't think we can go to the other extreme and say, okay, as long as you establish you've got backlog, here's the money, and you don't have to work on, you don't have to touch that backlog, you can go out and buy a car. It has to go to backlog. So Brian, I saw your hand up, and then I think I saw Nancy's hand up. Brian?
Yeah, it's really, Pat just went into that a little bit more about my concern, and I agree with him on that point, and I think we should tweak the language. And I also have the other concern that if a court's percentage doesn't make it appear that it was, if my percentage is 75% today, and we get to March, and I have no idea what my percentage is going to be, but it could easily still be 75%, or a court could even go under that. And then I think it sends the message that we haven't worked on backlog when we know all along we have by anecdotal evidence and the fact of just how court operates on a basis. And so I think we're better served by broadening the language a little bit and recognizing not just specifically tying it to dispositions. Again, I'm good starting with that because I think it sets an easy way to say, here is what we know is your backlog, but I think we're limiting ourselves if we're sending this message that, okay, for me, I now have to get my disposition rate to 80% or 85%. And that may be substantially out of my control based upon numerous factors. But that doesn't mean that I haven't had people working on backlog, because I have them working on backlog every day. And so that just way that we tie that to court-specific disposition information, I think does not serve us well. And so if
okay, so
I
were I've to got, so I've, I I've got Nancy and then Chad, and then I'm not sure else, but one suggestion might be, for instance, Brian, for expenses that address and show a good faith effort to reduce. I'm just, again, I know I'm repeating myself, but what we are going to have to be able to show, I appreciate your point, Brian. This is a moving target, but mm-hmm. but a court that remains at the same percentage is going to have to show why. If you've remained at the same percentage, but you sent the money for something else, that's inappropriate. If you remain at the same percentage because you did your best to put out the fire and the fire's still blazing, I get that. And I apologize. So now as I work through, see, I lose track of who had their hand up. So I think it was Nancy. Go ahead, Nancy.
Nancy. Thank you. And I think you just spoke to the comments I wanted to make. I had inartfully in the beginning made the comment that, you know, the backlog affected everyone differently and there's different levels of service based on underfunding going into COVID and also level of technology. So I think that in reporting out what our backlog looks like coming out of, you know, the September timeframe and going forward from there, we need to be able to report that if we weren't able to make a substantial improvement on our backlog, it is because of these certain factors. And you spoke to that so well right now, so I don't have any other comment on that. Thanks.
Thanks, Nancy. Chris, and then if anybody else, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, Judge Conklin. Just first a process and timing question, and then a suggestion along with what Rebecca was suggesting about specific language. One is, so what I heard is that the alternative methodology that was proposed in the public comment would not be able to be considered by the committee, by the full committee, before it first going back to the subcommittee for consideration and recommendation. Is that correct?
Say that again.
So,
take it, Rebecca.
Go ahead, Chris. I'll let you restate it, and then I can respond.
No, just what I heard earlier is that, you know, in terms of consideration of the alternative methodology that was proposed by the public comment, that before it could be considered by the full TCBAC committee, would have to first go back to the subcommittee. Is that correct?
I would say that is yes. That's a yes answer. And that, and the reason is because it did come in as public comment. We don't necessarily have all the answers to the pieces of it. But that being said, I'm not suggesting that's not something we should do, but rather, so I guess this is one thing I think the group should be aware of. Even if we were to adopt today the recommendations as they're stated, we still have to have a cohesive submission from the JBBC. And so if there's something that they don't feel is well fleshed out or there's enough consideration, they're gonna send it back to the committee as well. So what I'm suggesting is if there is anything that we need to further discuss, I think now would be the time because if we are pushing this through in order to take advantage of timing, that timing may be inadvertently delayed anyway because of JBBC. So if we have a piece of it that we want to further explore, I think it's important that we do that. That being said, I think that if there was something that was sent back to the subcommittee, there should be specific direction as to what we're looking at, because we did, we sliced and diced this, we felt like 21 different ways. That doesn't mean there wasn't 22 or 23 ways, but that being said, we did spend a lot of time evaluating, and I think it would be only fair to the subcommittee that we understand specifically what this bigger group would want, rather than just kind of throwing everything back. And so, so I think the answer, my short answer, Chris, I think would be yes, but certainly Judge Conklin, you can trump me on that.
Well, no, I'm not going to trump you. I think you're right. But again, we can't lose sight of the fact that what we're trying to do here is get out a recommendation for the first 50 million, actually specifically the second 25 million. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. So this could be something that could go back to the working group to say, okay, and the next step will be, here's the recommendation for the second 25 million going out. But recognizing everybody's points here, is there, as we look forward, is there a more effective way to do it? But Chris, I understand what you're saying, and it could get back to the working group, but Rebecca's absolutely right. We need to tell the working group what to do, and keep in mind, we're going to have to come up with a recommendation pretty soon. It's getting close to 1:30. We have to reverse engineer this. We have to get it to JBBC. This is probably going to end up now before the council in January. I don't see a way practically the second 25 million can get to the council for its November meeting. I just don't think that's practical even today. So it gives us a little bit of breathing room, but we also have to be expeditious, because if we don't get to them in January, then it's March at the earliest. So January sounds a little bit far away, but it's not. Judge Thompson?
No, sorry, Judge Conklin. Given that, I mean, I'm willing to move the recommendations as drafted with one change, if this is my one shot, that in B, where it says the methodology is the net difference between the average of each court's COVID-related backlog, I would add either as a parenthetical or between commas, weighted by case type. from March 2019 to September 2019, and the rest would all be the same. Just adding weighting by case type. It's a known, accepted, recognized methodology for pretty much everything else we do related to funding allocation. So just suggesting that we include that in this as well. Thank you.
So that, I've got to be careful here, because that was actually a motion. So
we've that had was a motion, yes.
We've had a committee member who's made a motion to approve the recommendations A, B, second sentence of C, because the first is already approved, D and E, with the change in recommendation B, adding COVID-related backlog weighted by case type from March to November 2019. So that's at least a starting point. There's a motion. There's not a second, but there's a motion.
This is Brandy.
This is Carter. Can I ask a question?
Of course.
So the weight would be based on the weights currently used in what, Chris? The judicial needs assessment or the RAS? How would you establish the weights?
Like, could it be done by either, you know, AGN or RAS?
Well, no, because they're significantly different, as you know, and that's, now we're kind of going into the rabbit hole. So what takes a lot of time for staff to do in certain cases do not necessarily take judges a lot of time and vice versa. So I'm not opposed to waiting because I understand what you're saying. I think by using the overall backlog, it probably does that a little bit anyway, because our makeup is probably fairly similar, although maybe not, I don't know that. But I would just like to know on what basis the weight would be applied.
I think RAS is probably the better model, Sherry, for this purpose.
So there's two options here. One would be weighted by case type as defined by RAS.
Yeah.
The other would be to, and again, I'm just trying to further a discussion. Chris, instead of inserting that language as you suggested, the recommendations are adopted as stated with the following direction to the working group. Step one, consider weighting case types by RAS and report back on that. And secondarily, consider the public comment recommendation from the 25 courts as to averaging rather than specific case numbers and report back on that.
Well, you know, Judge Conklin, I was almost ready to second Chris's motion until you said that, but I think that would take us too long to do both of those things and do an assessment. I was hoping we would approve something and move up forward, because one thing courts do need is they need to know what their budget is going to look like. Can I continue to hire people and pay them overtime to work on backlog or not? Can I continue to have, you know, we need to have certainty around the budget. So that's my concern.
Okay, so I want to, so are you, just because I have to be real careful here, are you seconding Chris's motion with the insertion of weighted by case type as defined by RAS?
Well, I think we should have more discussion, and I don't know if it's after a second, or I think it is, the Robert's Rules of Order means second before a discussion. Is that right?
Generally.
So I would second it if it was by RAS, but that does not necessarily mean I would vote for it. I just want to hear the discussion first.
Okay, so the motion that's now been made and seconded, at least for purposes of discussion, is that A, B, C, D, and E be approved. The first sentence in E already approved. So the second sentence would be part of the motion. And secondarily, in recommendation B, inserting after the word backlog, weighted by case type as defined by RAS. So now we're open to discussion on that. Rebecca, did you
light up? David's hand is up. So actually, I'll let David respond. And then I think Judge Thompson was up. And then they may answer my questions. And there was a hand by Chad Finke as well.
So David, and then Judge Thompson, and then Chad.
Yeah, so thanks very much. So one of the things that I thought Sherry was going forward with is that the disposition counts of before and the disposition counts
of today would be comparable in terms of case makeup. So I'm very mindful that there is enormous benefit in distributing the funding as soon as we can, because there's a great deal of planning that needs to be done just to implement even the easiest of changes. And while I do recognize an opportunity to be gained by placing weights on the work, I wonder if the benefit of synthesizing the information that constitutes the disposition levels that we have today would necessarily make a significant enough impact to the formula for distributing the funds. So it's not perfect. I think I've expressed that before, but it seems reasonable to draw the connection between the composition of dispositions today versus the composition of dispositions before. Felony cases, as an example, we're not experiencing the same level of felony dispositions as we once were. So that number's down. We're certainly not hearing the number of dispositions in traffic now, because that's a low priority. So when you consider some of those variables and realities, traffic is not getting heavy attention. We just can't do that. And we're already not disposing of felony dispositions as we would like to be. Maybe the connection between case composition today versus before would be sufficient enough to come up with a funding distribution formula that also helps address something that Sherry expressed really, which I agree with wholeheartedly, is trying to get the funds presented for consideration and distribution as quickly as possible. We're by the time we get the funding, are we looking at February, March? Boy, that's going to be very challenging for us to make meaningful progress in the second half of the year.
So I've got some names to call, and I'll do that. I'll remind folks that we have a 1:30 time limit here. And speaking of traffic, that's what I have to get back to handle traffic court today, which is very active for us. But I would also remind everybody, as I did when I began, remember motion 4 from the council. That's an order to us. Have TICBAC develop in consultation with JBBC. Recommendations for allocating the remaining, TICBAC will report the recommendations to the council. So we have a significant step here after any recommendation we make today, and that is we go to JBBC, and they could easily turn back around and say, oops, got to take care of this, that, and such before we're going to approve you to get to the council. But with that, I believe, Judge Thompson, you were next.
Yes, just touching on that exact point, Judge Conklin, I think given that what I heard before, I think, was that JBBC is going to expect us to have assessed everything, done an analysis on everything. We have courts. We have 26 courts, I believe, signing on to an alternative recommendation. That's almost half the courts in the state. It seems maybe like a little bit of wordsmithing. I don't know the difference, frankly, between the change in dispositions versus the percentage of decline. There's clearly a difference. I just heard David Yamasaki talking about a decline in the percentage of dispositions around felonies, for instance, when you talk about not getting them out. I think it would be better to send it back. That way it can be stated to JBBC, it's been considered, it's been vetted, and it goes once and we get it out, versus what you recognized is the delay that will take place if it goes and then gets sent back to us.
So, Chad, you were next.
Well, thanks, Judge. And given the comments that have just come, this may be moot, but I know we do have a pending motion and a second. And I don't think that the pending motion addresses the concern that Brian originally raised. And so I do, if we are going to go forward on a vote on that motion, I would ask, I guess, Chris and Sherry as the second, if they would entertain a friendly amendment to do one of two things on the second sentence in C, either eliminate the words "and reduce" or, you know, say eligible expenditures for the second 25 million or for expenses that address, comma, and if at all possible, reduce the COVID backlog. Because I remain concerned that through no fault of its own, a court, you know, the dispo rate may stay static, even though the court has spent in good faith all of its allocation on reducing dispos. And if that were to happen and that court were to get to March and suddenly be told you have to give money back, I don't think that was the intent. And I want to be very clear. I am absolutely not advocating a lack of accountability. I understand very well there needs to be accountability on exactly how we spent this money and particularly how we spent it to improve our dispo rates. And so I just want to be clear, I'm not suggesting that we aren't accountable for that, but just that we may do our absolute best, be able to show we did our absolute best, and our dispo rate still stays static. And so it's that notion of a reduction that continues to cause me some level of concern.
So you suggested, if at all possible, there was a prior suggestion that it would be for expenses that address, comma, and show good faith efforts to reduce.
And I would be fine with that as well, as a friendly amendment request on any of those wordings, whichever the group likes best.
Okay. So that Chad has now asked that there be a friendly amendment. Is that accepted?
I would accept that friendly amendment of and show good faith efforts to reduce.
Sherry?
So I am actually, I don't know if this is authorized or not, and my maiden name is Robert, so you'd think I'd know. But I am going to withdraw my second because I really do not believe there is a way to weight them except in the allocation piece. You can't weight them in the comparison piece. I think that what Chris is talking about is more what I'm hoping that we will continue to work on to apply to the new filings. The stuck cases and using the methodology that's presented, I don't see a way to actually use a weight because the overall percentage will have already done that because you're comparing, as David said, felonies to felonies, misdemeanors to misdemeanors, traffic to traffic. We're not comparing LA to Alpine. We're comparing Alpine to Alpine and LA to LA. So,
okay. We'll show Sherry's second is withdrawn.
Yep.
So there's, but I'm not asking for a second yet. I have a thought, but I want to go to Rebecca first. So, and again, folks, I'm not trying to rush this, and this might prove the point about we need to take a deep breath, but Rebecca?
So Judge Ryan. Judge Conklin. Judge Ryan is also on the call, but Judge Conklin, what I would propose if there is no second for Chad's motion, I would offer a counter motion. I'm not sure what the Roberts Rules of Orders are, but if that's...
Well, you might have read my mind, because I was about to do the same thing because it hasn't been seconded yet. So I think we can consider an alternative motion with all respect to him who made the first motion. But the way we think, I think your motion is going to be the same as mine, so I'll let you state it. And if not, then I'll suggest. Go ahead.
Okay. So given the... there are some language concerns and there is some history that I think... in terms of the process that we went through, and there, and I don't think we can ignore that there is a significant support behind a public comment. I would propose that the recommendations be sent back to the subcommittee to do a final review, and that the TICBAC group consider setting a special meeting to evaluate a revised proposal that would then be forwarded to JBBC.
And that's very consistent with what I was thinking, but that is, I really think we need to consider, obviously, that public comment proposal. I think that has some significant aspects to it that really need to be vetted. And out of respect to those courts, we should. I do think the case weight issue is something important to talk about. So even though I'm the chair, I'm moving as a general member to second Rebecca's motion, and that would be that each of recommendations A, B, second sentence of C, D, and E, as stated in your materials, be referred back to the working group for further consideration to include the public comment submitted, the suggestion of considering case types in recommendation B, and the consideration of also in second sentence of C, recognizing that good faith efforts to reduce backlog should be recognized. So that's the, Rebecca, is that a, does that restate or is that consistent with your motion?
That's a little more specific than my motion. I would actually suggest that rather than those last two comments that you were very specific on as far as the good faith efforts and the case weight, that it be discussed at the subcommittee so that language can be evaluated to consider whether or not we can be more specific. Because I think that there were some comments brought up by, I believe it was Brian and or maybe Chad, that specifically, you know, the time period that we're dealing with, I'm not sure that there can be any kind of a visible progress. And I just want to make sure the subcommittee has the space to discuss the subjects thoroughly rather than the specific comment.
Great. You're the chair of the subcommittee, so I'll defer to you. So I'm seconding your motion. So it's been moved and seconded that the recommendations as set forth in the materials be referred back to the working group for their continued efficient and expeditious work and report back to tick back at a yet to be determined special meeting to be held very soon to consider the final recommendation as it gets to JBBC. Now remember, we're gonna have to reverse engineer this because I really don't think we wanna go beyond the January council meeting for a final recommendation about the second 25 million. So I give you fair warning, working group members and TICBAC members, this is a turnaround, like within a week or 10 days. But the motion's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? You guys just want me to get to my traffic court, huh? Okay, so there's no further discussion that the motion be moved and seconded. Is there any opposition to the recommendation that's been moved and seconded? I've moved, I've paused, I've waited. I hear no opposition, I see no hands. The recommendation is unanimously approved. I think this is very appropriate, folks. This should not be a reflection that we can't get the work done. This should be a reflection that we want to get the work done right. And I appreciate everybody's efforts in that regard. Stand by. You're going to be getting a doodle poll probably in the next day or two to keep this moving quickly. So thank you all so much to the working group members. Yes. Well, let me say it another way. No, you can't get away. We still need you. So we're going to be in touch. Anything else for the good of the order? We're adjourned. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.